Shalom and welcome to Shnayim Mikra, the study series sponsored by the Orthodox Union, hosted at OU.org, in which we examine one aliyah per podcast of the current Parashat HaShavua. My name is Yitzhak Etshalom, and I'm thrilled and excited to be beginning the monumental Sefer Shmot and our technologically advanced but anchored in ancient days study of the text and the nuances of the text. And Sefer Shmot begins with a very famous recap of the emigration of Yaakov and his children to Mitzrayim, which happened well in the past. All of these people have already died. Ve'ela Shemot b'nei Yisrael abayim Mitzrayima. Eit Yaakov ish uveito ba'u. Eit Yaakov means with Yaakov, every man came with his household. And now, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, notice the order and the grouping. Yisachar, Zvulun, and Vinyamin. And last, and least, Dan, v'naftali, Gad, v'asher. I'll explain what I meant by that in a moment. Vahi kol nefesh yotzei yerach Yaakov shivim nafesh. Now this pasuk is very difficult because back in Parshat Vayigash, and I mentioned it 2 weeks ago in the podcast, the difficulty with cheshbon, with the accounting of the fuller list that's presented there of all of the children and grandchildren and in four cases great-grandchildren of Yaakov who came to Mitzrayim includes 69, including, of course, the three that were already in Mitzrayim, Yosef, Ephraim, and Manasseh. And the Ibn Ezra famously answers that the 70th is Yaakov himself. That works within the Pasukim in Vayigash. It doesn't work here because the Pasuk says, Vahi kol nefesh yotzei yerach Yaakov shivim nafesh. In other words, Yaakov's progeny was 70. And Yosef Hayav Mitzrayim makes it sound as if Yosef's not even in the Cheshbon. So there's particular problems there with numbers. Vayamot Yosef v'chol achav v'chol hador hahu. And now Yosef and his brothers and that entire generation. Now, what does that entire generation mean? That is a critical question for understanding the timing and therefore the duration of the decrees and the slavery. For right now, I'll just propose the two different ways to read it. Either it means Yosef and his brothers and that entire generation, meaning the brothers' wives and Egyptians from that time period, etc., all died. The second possibility is Kol Hadorahu is a reference to all of the 70, which would mean now that not only Yehuda and Levi and Shimon died, but also Gershon, Kehat, Merari, Peretz, Zerach, all of the children. In other words, nobody who had seen the land of Canaan was alive anymore. And now it is a fully fresh start. And in a sense, that gives the entire nuance of the text a different flavor in that there has really been an absolute turnover. There is no more link to the ancient, to the older generation and to the existence in the land of Canaan. And that is the preferred reading. This introduction, ends with Uvnei Yisrael paru vayishvitzu vayirbu vayatzmu bimod meod vatimalei haaretz otam. The way that this is simply read, and it's applied in our study of the Haggadah Shel Pesach, is that Bnei Yisrael became fruitful, multiplied, powerful, exceedingly powerful, and the land was filled with them, which of course is a precursor to the xenophobia that affects Egypt of all of these foreigners taking over and makes it easy for Paro to begin his heinous decrees. However, the Sforno points out something which takes this entire story and the entire story of Shibud Mitzrayim into a different direction from the get-go. He says, Paru, very good, they became fruitful, but Vayishritzu, to crawl around and creep around, is not a laudatory phrase of becoming numerous. It rather is a denigrating phrase of saying they became lowly. Vayishritzu, they became like Shratzim. In his wording, Natu l'derach shratzim. They began being like vermin, which of course sets us up for the next piece, and I'll mention the Sforno's direction in there. However, another piece to that puzzle is what I mentioned earlier about the breakdown of the family, shall we say, the presentation of the members of the family here. If you look through, beginning from the middle of Sefer Bereishit, when the sons are all assembled together, you will see that there's a vacillation between presenting them by houses, in other words, Leah's house, Rachel's house, Bilhah's house, Zilpah's house, or shall we say Leah and Zilpah together, Rachel and Bilhah together, or between presenting them as the proper sons and the sons of the concubines. So for instance, when they are counted, you have, for the first time, you have Leah's house and Zilpah, and then Rachel and Bilhah. And on the other hand, when you first meet Yosef, you're told that Yosef is associating with B'nai Bilhah and B'nai Zilpah, making it sound as if, and some of the Rishonim go in this direction, that the children of the concubines were not favored, they were not esteemed like regular sons, and therefore they were friendly to Yosef, who was nice to them, whereas B'nai Leah were off on their own. When the brothers come down to Egypt to buy food, it's all 10 of them together. And we don't get a sense that one of them is more favored than the other, except, of course, for the famous scenes with Binyamin. When they come down as a large family, they are presented as Leah plus Zilpah, Rachel plus Bilhah. Again, the two houses, but not the caste system. Now, notice how they're presented. That from looking at from the retrospect, who came down? B'nai Leah, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, and Ben Rachel, and separately, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Vasher. They're not grouped with the mother that should they should be associated with. Dan and Naphtali with Binyamin, and Gad and Asher with Yisachar, Zvulun, and the other B'nai Leah. Rather, the concubines' sons are separated. And the sense is that here we've gone back into a caste system. There is a certain amount of disunity, which always spells... It is always a harbinger of bad times for Am Yisrael, and of course we'll see that here. And so then the first real parasha begins, because everything here is in, until here is introductory, and here we're going to hear about the main theme of Sefer Shemot, which is the redemption, as the Ramban points out. It's called Sefer HaGe'ulah, and therefore it has to begin with a description of the descent and a description of the servitude. The Ramban here also points out that the reason that the text goes back and counts B'nai Yisrael again is a literary purpose. He quotes Rashi's famous point that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves B'nai Yisrael so much, he counts them when they're alive, and he counts them when they're dead, he counts them when they come out, he counts them when they come in, like the stars, each of them by name. The Ramban says that's a beautiful midrash, and it's true as far as what it says about HaKadosh Baruch Hu loving B'nai Yisrael. However, the pshat is that we have a literary work. The literary work is the Book of Shemot. And the Book of Shemot, being a book of Geulah, has to begin with Galut. Galut begins when they leave Canaan and they come to Eretz Mitzrayim. Geulah, the Ramban says, a beautiful idea. Geulah does not mean when they are taken out of servitude, which would then take us to Perek Yud Aleph, or when they're taken out of Egypt, which would then take us to Perek Yud Gimel, or when they finally see the defeat of the Mitzrim, which would take us to Perek Tetvav, but rather is when the Shechinah returns to them like he was with them when they were in Eretz Canaan, and that, of course, is in the very last pasuk of Sefer Shemot. Okay, then we begin the first real story here, which is Vayakom HaMelech Chadash al Mitzrayim, famously Machloket Rav and Shmuel, whether it's really a new king or whether it's a king who has got new policies. Asher lo yadat Yosef. In other words, the simple read of this is that whole generation's gone. In the meantime, the children have multiplied and following Sforno have also lost their nobility. They've become like Shratzim. They're lowly. They are no longer noble in the eyes of the Egyptians nor in their own eyes. And now there's a new king who doesn't even know of Yosef, and therefore the policies are going to be different. Now, what do we have in Mitzrayim? If we look back in Parsha Vayigash, we've got an entire state of the indigenous population who is enslaved to the state, and we have a relatively small but quickly growing population of Canaanim who are foreigners and who have elite status. They get a check for every child in the family, food given by the government, etc. It's very easy for him to do the following. Vayomer elamo, hine am b'nei Yisrael rav ve'atzum mimenu. Take a look. Am b'nei Yisrael, the nation of the children of Israel, which is now their national, the tribal name, rav ve'atzum mimenu. Just as the Pasuk in Pasuk Zion said, they are more numerous and more powerful than we are. Now, of course, if that were really true, that they're more numerous and powerful than we are, then there's nothing to talk about. What the point is he's scaring them a little bit and saying that if we don't act quickly, then they will indeed overpower us. Havanit chakmalo. Let us deal wisely. So there's now a conspiracy between the king and his people against these foreigners. Pen yirbeh, because the concern is that they will become even more numerous. Vayaki tigranam elchamanu osafkam huasoneinu. When a war comes, there'll be a fifth column. V'nacham banu v'yalam min haaretz. And they'll fight against us, and then this very bizarre phrase, and they'll leave the land. And everybody's bothered by this phrase. What is v'yalam min haaretz? It should be v'alinu min haaretz, v'yala al haaretz, the Ramban, Rashi, everybody goes to town on this. The Sforno suggests something which is just gorgeous. He says, read as if there's a parenthesis in here. Read the pasuk as follows. Havanitchak malo v'yalam min haaretz. Meaning, let's deal wisely with them and get them out of here. Meaning, let's act in a wise way that will make them leave. We don't want them here anymore. And parenthetically, the reason for all of that is because if they're here, we're afraid there'll be a fifth column. If that's the case, then vayasimu alav sarem yisim l'man anoto basiv lotam, they put tax masters over them in order to afflict them. In other words, there is a labor tax. Read the Ramban here. Very illustrative and very, very instructive. There was a labor tax that was put on them in order to make them work hard to work for the state. Vayiven aremis kenot lefarot pitom vetram seis. They build storage cities. This is, of course, a very big irony, considering who was the first one to come up with the idea of storage cities in Egypt. It was Yosef. And now his own family, descendants of Sem, are building storage cities for Paro, and the cities are named Pitom and Ramses. Ramses, of course, being also a royal name. And what Ramses means is, and it's a name we're going to get to in the next podcast, is Meses means son. Ramses means the son of Ra, the god of Egypt. And so now, in order to get them, according to this Sforno, to get them to leave the country, they put the tax. Now, what would happen if you came to people who are of noble stock and themselves of noble heirs, and you say to them, you're now going to have to work hard for the state? Chances are that if they couldn't fight it, they'd leave. They say, we don't have to be here. There's no famine anymore. We're rich. We'll go back home. But strangely enough, what happens? They accept it, and they accept a lowly position. But in the meantime, the more the Egyptians afflicted them, the more their plans backfired. Because instead of afflicting them and getting them to get frustrated and leave, or else stop populating because they're so tired, instead the opposite happened. They became more numerous. And the Egyptians were getting fed up. They were tired of this. And so now it moves down, meaning from a formal labor tax of, shall we say, like Shlomo had 1 month tax, two months you work for yourself, etc. Now Mitzrayim fully enslaved Bnei Israel and made them work hard. Vayimaru et chayehem. They embittered their lives. Ba'avodah, kasha, b'chomer, uvilvanim. Now they're not only building the cities, they're actually working with the bricks themselves. Uvchol avodah basadeh, making them do all sorts of work. Eight kol avodah tamashar avdu b'em mefarach. Everything they did was backbreaking work. Then there's a whole different plan. And Mirtz Hashem, the second volume of my book, Between the Lines of the Bible, will be coming out within the year. And one of the first essays in it is exactly on this particular point, Ayen Sham, about the two different plans that are going on. The first public plan of labor tax and slavery, and the second discrete plan of something akin to infanticide. He speaks to the Mialdot HaIvriot. What does that phrase mean? So most people read it as Mialdot who are Ivriot, meaning the midwives who are Ivriot. Remember, we're talking about a nation of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people. They don't have two midwives. They have hundreds of midwives. So who are these? These are evidently the chief midwives, or the ones who are in the local city or whatever. Their names are Shifra and Pua. Now the difficulty with this is that Shifra and Pua are both Egyptian names. So either these are Ivriot, who have become very Egyptized and have these Egyptian names, although many Jews did. Or, like the Abravanel says, and it's far more reasonable, Hamialdot HaIvriot means Hamialdot Et HaIvriot, the Egyptian women who were midwives for the Ivriot. And the reason that that is so recommended is that it's hard to believe that Paro would entrust the devious plan about which we're going to hear in the next pasuk to Hebrew women. How could he possibly assume that they would go ahead with this plan of killing children as they're born and telling the mother whatever story they're going to tell her, as opposed to warning the mothers and saving the children? And what does he say? Vayomer b'yaladchen eta ivriot uritena al ha'ovnaim. The Ofnaim is a very interesting piece, and I'll just mention very quickly, a fellow wrote an article a number of years ago about the Ofnaim. The word Ofnaim shows up one other place famously in Tanakh, in Yirmiyahu Yodchet, when Hashem tells Yirmiyahu to go down to the artisan's house and see the potter on his wheel. And then he says, Kinei kachomer biyare yotzer, kein b'nei beit Yisrael, right, Nam Yisrael, and that's where the famous piyut in Yom Kippur says, if it comes from, that Am Yisrael is like, is to me like the pottery in the, on the potter's wheel, shape it, break it, etc. And, the Ofnaim here, which is a birth stool, is commonly translated as a birth stool, is a very difficult translation. Because, what is it that he's telling them to do? Im bein hu v'amiteno tov im bati v'chaya. Meaning, take a look when he's born. If he's a boy, kill him. If he's a girl, let her live. But it's a little bit difficult if there's suddenly a rash of a bunch of children who are born fine and then suddenly mysteriously die a minute or two after birth, people are going to catch on. So what does this whole thing mean, and what are Ofnaim? So this fellow suggested that Ofnaim really is a reference to some relatively ancient technology that the Egyptians had, where they were able to do a prenatal test and identify what the gender of the child was going to be. And he said, therefore, you would do this prenatal test, and if indeed it was a boy, then you kill him in utero, so he's a stillborn. That was not uncommon in the ancient world for miscarriages and stillborn births. And if it's a daughter, let her live. In any case, what happened? Vatir'enna miyaldot et ha'elohim, v'lo asu kasher divar alein melech Yitzrayim, v'atcheyena et ha'eladim. That the midwives feared God. This is a phrase that we already found with Yosef and Mrs. Potiphar, reference to general morality, when a person is aware of the Supreme Being and of his responsibility to maintain that morality, they have that fear, and they did not do what the king of Mitzrayim commanded them, v'atchayena et ha'eladim, and they kept the eladim alive, they kept the boys alive, they allowed them to be born properly, and of course, this is another backfire, because everything Paro was trying to do to limit the demographic growth of Am B'nai Yisrael is backfiring on him, and the nation continues to grow. We'll pick it up in the next podcast of the second Aliyah. In the meantime, everybody should have a wonderful day.